Saving and everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vestair Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vestair products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now. Save big. Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick-install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big. Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick-install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big. Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vestair Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vestair products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now. Save big.
This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast in True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Yes, counsel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Could you please tell the jury your first and last name?
Patrick Dwyer.
Can you please spell your last name for the record?
D-W-Y-E-R.
And how are you employed, sir?
I'm a firefighter paramedic at the Duxbury Fire Department.
And in what capacity are you a firefighter or paramedic? Do you have any supervisory roles?
No, I'm not a supervisor at the department.
Okay. Now, in your role as a firefighter and a paramedic, did you receive training for those roles?
Yes.
And how long have you worked for the Duxbury Fire Department?
It's in my eighth year right now.
I'm going to draw your attention to January 24th of 2023. Do you recall working that day?
Yes.
Were you on a 24-hour shift?
Yes.
And so that would be an 8 a.m. to 8 a.m., correct?
Correct.
At approximately 6 o'clock or just after 6 p.m., were you dispatched to 47 Summer Street?
Yes.
What was your assignment that day at on shift?
I was working on the engine at Ottawa Station 2.
Where is Station 2 located in the town of Duxbury?
On Franklin Street.
When the dispatch came in to 47 Summer Street, do you know approximately how long it took you to get from Station 2 to the location?
A few minutes.
Who was working with you at Station 2 that day?
Jennifer Stratton.
What were each of your designated roles?
I believe Jen was driving the engine, and I was the... in the officer's seat.
Now, at Station 2 in Duxbury, is it normal for just two of you to be on shifts at that station at any given time?
Yes, correct.
And fair to say there are other firefighters and paramedics that are on staff at the central station, correct?
Correct.
And in this dispatch, you at Station 2 on the engine were dispatched to 47 Summer Street, correct?
That's correct.
When you received the dispatch, did you have any information that there had been children involved?
No, we did not.
When you got to the scene, what did you see?
When we got there, it was dark out. We started walking towards the house, and the other firefighters were there before us. Then we were directed to go to the basement.
Before going to the basement, were you directed towards the outside of the house and then redirected to the basement?
We were walking towards the backyard, so I believe that's where the first person was located. So we were kind of making our way back there.
So I'm just going to show you what's been previously marked as exhibit number 34. Can you see it on the screen next to you?
Yes.
And so would this be 47 Summer Street?
Yes.
And fair to say you were on your way to the backyard on the left side when you were redirected?
Yes.
Did you ever make it into the backyard?
We went through the backyard to go into the residence.
Okay. But you were directed to the basement, testified?
Yes.
If you could take a look at that screen again, I'm going to show you what's been marked as exhibit 38. Can you see over here sliding glass doors?
Yes.
Is that where you entered the house?
Yes.
You indicated that you also went to the basement, correct?
Correct.
When you got into the house and went down into the basement, which side did you go to at the bottom of the stairs, the right or the left?
We went down to the left.
What did you observe when you went down into the basement?
We saw two children on the ground and the father sitting on the couch next to them.
So again, just going to show you what's been previously marked as exhibit 95. Is that fair to be the left side?
Yes.
Basement? And exhibit 96. Where did you see the father?
He was sitting on a couch or something in the area. Not sure exactly which one.
Did you also observe the children on the floor?
Yes.
How many children?
Two.
What did you do when you observed the children?
We started CPR. They were in cardiac arrest.
Okay, and so which child did you work on?
The 5-year-old girl.
Okay. Where was she located?
On the floor in that room.
So as far as looking at exhibit number 96, does that depict the area, general area where you saw the 5-year-old child?
Yes.
Did you treat her? Where did you see her?
Right in that area. I can't remember exactly where it was.
Okay. In this photograph of exhibit number 96, do you see a lot of equipment?
Yes.
And I'm just going to show you exhibit 101, too, with some more equipment. Do you see all that equipment there?
Yes.
Is that equipment that was used to treat the 5-year-old child?
Yes.
Did you learn her name to later be Cora Clancy?
Yes.
While you were assisting or working with Cora, what was Jen Stratton doing, your partner?
She was with the other child.
Do you recall where the other child was in relation to Cora?
They're kind of right next to each other.
So again, showing you exhibit number 96, if you look to the middle of the photograph, there's a red spot on the floor. Is that a fair place where Cora was?
Yes.
And would the other child, the younger infant, was he closer to the couch or the bed area, or was he in a different location in the basement?
Probably more towards this side, I would say, if I can remember.
When you say this side, like, what do you see in the picture to depict where?
Probably closer to the cardiac monitor.
Okay, and can you tell us which is the cardiac monitor? Is it here at the bottom?
Yes, that piece of equipment right there.
And again, in exhibit 101, can you see the cardiac monitor a little better?
Yes.
Where is it in this photograph?
Right there.
Do you mind just getting up and pointing to it on the screen? So we're talking about this black bag that is sort of off-center of the photograph next to a blue bag. Is that fair to say?
Sorry, what was the question?
I'm just trying to locate it on the picture for the record. So you pointed to a black bag that's kind of off-center in this photograph, correct?
This is a cardiac monitor.
Okay, thank you. When you started to treat Cora, what were your observations of her when you came upon her?
I noticed she kind of looked like she had some burst blood vessels around her eyes.
Did you make any observations of the color of her skin?
It was kind of pale, bluish.
When you approach the patient, what's the first thing that you do to assess them?
I check for breathing, check for a pulse.
Did she have a pulse?
No.
Was she breathing?
No.
And when you're doing those things, are you able to make observations of the area around their face, like their nose and their mouth?
Yes.
In this circumstance with Cora, did you notice anything around her mouth?
Around her mouth? Not that I can recall.
When you are trying to assess her breathing, is there anything you do to try to resuscitate somebody or get them to breathe?
Yes, we would use a bag valve mask to help them breathe.
Did you do that for Cora?
Eventually, when we got the equipment down there, yes.
And were you able to use that device and get her to breathe on her own?
No.
And while you're utilizing that bag valve mask, fair to say you're in close contact and making observations of the patient's face and mouth, correct?
Yes.
And you indicated that you're not sure if you recalled seeing anything around her mouth?
Nothing particularly that I can think of.
Okay. If I may approach.
Yeah.
Just going to show you page 9, and if you could read that 17 through 19 to yourself. Does that refresh your memory?
Yes.
What did you observe in or around Cora's mouth?
That she did have some blood in her mouth.
Did eventually other emergency staff come down and help you with rendering aid on Cora?
Yes.
And fair to say, one of the things that you do is maintain compressions and CPR.
Yes.
And can you do that by yourself, or do you often have to have somebody help?
Well, we usually have multiple people working.
And in this circumstance, with the treatment of Cora, other people came in and helped you with those things?
Yes.
Were you eventually able to prepare her to leave the basement area?
Yes, once we get more first responders down there.
And fair to say there was first responders from other departments that came and helped prepare to bring Cora out of the basement, correct?
Yes.
Do you recall how she left the basement?
We took her out of the basement on a backboard up the bulkhead stairs.
And the firefighters that were assisting putting her on the backboard, do you remember where they were from, what town?
Marshfield.
When Cora was placed into an ambulance, do you remember what ambulance she was placed into?
Marshfield ambulance.
Did you continue to help assist them when she was put in the ambulance?
Yes, I went to the hospital with them.
And do you remember who the firefighters were that were from Marshfield that were helping you?
Yes, Andrew Wilkins, Ryan Henry, and Kerry Carver.
And fair to say, Andrew and Ryan were in the back of the ambulance with you, correct?
Yes.
And Kerry was driving?
I believe she was in the back also.
Okay. At some point, somebody hopped in the front seat and drove?
Yes.
And when you got to the hospital, which hospital did you transport to?
Beth Israel Plymouth.
Were efforts continued to be made in that transport from Duxbury to Beth Israel and Plymouth?
Yes.
While inside of the ambulance, did you try to use one of those cardiac machines to shock or defibrillate Cora?
Yes.
Was there any result for that?
We shocked once but did not regain pulses.
And when you got to the hospital, did you transfer care to the emergency staff at Beth Israel?
Yes.
And did you do anything further on the care and treatment of Cora?
Not once we transferred care, no.
And nothing further.
Mr. Rankin?
I have no questions. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you, sir. You may step down. Thank
Thanks.
You. Hey, good morning.
Morning.
All right. I'm going to ask you to keep your voice up so the jury can hear you, okay?
Okay.
Great, thank you. Yeah, Therese Sprague.
Thank you. Good morning. Can you please state and spell your name for the record?
Yes, Jennifer Stratton, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R-S-T-R-A-T-T-O-N.
And your date of birth?
July 11th, 1986.
Where do you work?
Duxbury Fire Department.
And how long have you been a Duxbury firefighter?
12 years.
Are you also a paramedic?
Yes.
And how long have you been a paramedic?
About 13.
And have you completed all the training and certification required to be a paramedic?
Yes.
I want to direct your attention to January 24th, 2023. Were you working that day?
Yes, I was.
And were you working a 24-hour shift that started at 8 a.m.?
Yes.
And were you part of a crew that was dispatched to 47 Summer Street just after 6 p.m.?
Yes.
And who was with you in that crew?
Firefighter Patrick Dwyer was with me in the engine that night.
And approximately how long did it take you to get from the station you were located at to 47 Summer Street?
Maybe 4 or 5 minutes.
And were you driving?
I was driving that night.
What did you see when you arrived?
Pulled up to the address, saw our ambulance crew. They had arrived just before we did. They were starting to walk to the back of the house.
And did you follow?
Yes.
And what did you see in the backyard?
Came to the backyard, saw firefighter Dan Doherty kneeling next to a person. It was very dark. Ended up being Miss Clancy. That was all we saw for a few seconds.
And at that point, did you hear something?
We did. Heard a voice yelling for us to get inside of the house, that there was a kid hanging in the basement.
And did you go into the house?
We did.
And what entrance did you go in?
Through the slider doors in the rear.
And did that lead you into the kitchen?
Yes.
And then did you proceed to the basement?
Yes.
When you got down to the basement, down the basement stairs, would it be accurate to state that you can either go right or left?
Yes.
Which direction did you go?
We took a left.
And what did you see when you went left?
We took a left and we saw Callan and Cora face up on the ground.
And when you saw them, what did you do?
I immediately jumped on the radio to ask for two additional ambulances, that we needed more help. And we, Patrick ran to Cora and I went to Callan.
And showing you what's been marked as Exhibit 100. Is this the room that you entered?
Yes.
And where was Cora, to your memory?
Cora was just to the left in this picture, and Callan was just to the right.
And when you say just to the left, are you putting over towards the equipment against the wall in the picture?
Yes.
And when you say to the right, are you pointing to the area to the right of the dresser?
Yes.
And showing you Exhibit 98, is that the area where Callan was found?
Yes.
And close up Exhibit 99, do you see the pajamas there, the stethoscope, and the blue exercise band?
Yes.
Do you recall removing Callan's pajamas to treat him?
I did, yes.
So when you went over to Callan, you remove his clothing. What do you do after that?
I didn't remove his entire onesie right away. Made sure that checked him for a pulse. He did not have one. Immediately started chest compressions on him.
Now for this is an 8-month-old baby,
yes.
Correct? Is the way you do chest compressions for a baby different than other people, other ages?
Yes, because of the size, you have to scoop your arms around and you compress with your thumbs in the center.
I'll allow it.
So you said you have to put your hands underneath on the back of the child and then use your thumbs to do compressions?
Yes.
And is that what you did for Callan?
Yes.
And what did you do next?
Continued CPR on him until more help and hands started to arrive on scene. We had an off-duty firefighter, Tom Brandt, come in, and he started to assist me. He took over compressions briefly while more help started to arrive.
When Brandt took over chest compressions, what did you do?
At that point, someone had brought down a bag valve mask to help us deliver oxygen to the child, and we started delivering oxygen to the child.
And at some point, did you remove the pajamas completely?
Yes.
And when you removed the pajamas completely, was that so someone could attempt to get IO access through the baby's legs? And was that successful?
That was not successful, no.
Is that difficult to do with a child that age?
It's a little more difficult. It's a less frequent practice skill. But
were multiple attempts made to get the IV and access into the bone in Callan's leg?
I attempted once, and another provider attempted a second time. I don't remember who that was.
And neither attempt was successful? What did you do next?
Sorry, I didn't get her
answer. Oh, what was your answer?
For which
I'm sorry. Was either attempt successful?
No.
What did you do next?
Eventually, Kingston Fire arrived on scene to provide the ambulance for transport for Callan. I don't know how long we were in the basement for, but we did make the decision. Eventually, it was time to get moving to the truck and start going to the hospital.
While you were working on Callan, did you notice any injuries on him?
Yes, he had deep strangulation marks around the entire circumference of his neck.
And throughout the entire time that you're in the basement, are chest compressions being done and you're trying to assist him with breathing?
Yes.
Did he, in the home, ever regain a pulse or the ability to breathe?
No, he did not.
Was he eventually taken to the ambulance?
Yes.
And how was he removed from the basement and brought to the ambulance?
I scooped him up in my arms and carried him outside to the truck.
And did you go with him in that transport to the hospital?
Yes.
And at any point in time, did he regain the ability to breathe or heartbeat during that transport?
No, he did not.
Was care transferred to medical staff at Beth Israel Deaconess Plymouth?
Yes, they were.
Nothing further. Thank you.
Mr. Rennington?
Thank you.
You may step down. Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Morning.
If I may?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Can you please state and spell your name for the record?
It's Robert Costanzo, C-O-S-T-A-N-Z-O.
And your date of birth, please?
4/24/1985.
Where do you work?
Pembroke Fire Department.
And how long have you been a Pembroke firefighter?
I've been there since 2011.
And are you also a paramedic?
I am.
How long have you been a paramedic?
I've been with Pembroke since 2011, and I started an EMS in 2006.
And have you done all the training and certification required to be a paramedic?
Yes.
I want to direct your attention to January 24th, 2023. Were you working that day?
Yes, I was.
And were you working an overtime shift that day?
Yes.
What was your role on that shift?
I was assigned to the ambulance.
And at some point after 6 p.m. that day, was there a call put out by Duxbury Fire Department for mutual aid?
Yes.
And being members of the Pembroke Fire Department, did you respond to that request for mutual aid?
Yes, we did.
Who responded?
It was me and my partner.
Who was your partner?
Dan Smith.
And did you go in an ambulance or some type of engine?
An ambulance.
Okay. And did you respond to the area of 47 Summer Street?
Yes, we did.
And approximately how long did it take you to get there?
Between 5 and 8 minutes.
When you arrived, what did you see?
There were multiple pieces of equipment, other ambulances, police cars.
When you arrived, were you directed to the backyard?
Yes.
And did you see a patient there in the backyard?
Yes, we did.
And where was she located?
She was on the ground with a Duxbury firefighter. She was already C-spined on a longboard with a collar. She was unresponsive but breathing on the ground.
And did you learn her name was Lindsay Clancy?
Yes.
And when you say she was already on a board with a C-spine, what type of equipment are we talking about? And if you could just explain to the jurors.
So it's just a long, flat board that we use to secure people when there's possible spinal injury. And she already had the collar on her neck. They had already started treatment prior to our arrival, so they had her all secured to the long backboard with the collar applied.
And did you notice anything about her wrists at that time?
Yes, her wrists were bandaged previously, assuming some kind of injury. There was no active bleeding or anything through the bandage. It was just, but her wrists were bandaged.
Was it white bandaging?
Yes.
And so nothing was seeping through to your eye? Did you see anything on her neck area?
She had some superficial lacerations that we could see around the collar, but we don't typically remove equipment after it's already been placed. So I didn't investigate any further than that. There was no active bleeding that I could see, so we just left it alone.
So there was, even with the collar, there was nothing, no blood flowing out of the collar or pooling around her or anything like that?
Correct.
Was she breathing?
She was.
Was she responsive?
No.
Was she making any noise at all?
She was moaning and groaning, but no words, no verbal response.
Did you bring her to your ambulance?
Yes, we did.
And when you got to the ambulance, what was your role?
I was the tech in charge. So we did as much of an assessment as we could without removing her from the board to look for any further injuries. Other than the injuries that the Duxbury Fire Department had already found, we didn't find any further injuries. And then we continued with treatment, vital signs, and such.
When you did the assessment, did you look at her head?
Yes.
Were there any cuts or bumps or dents that you noticed in her head?
Not that we noticed, no.
What about her arms? Other than the bandaging on her wrists, were there any cuts, obvious broken bones or injuries to her arms or her hands?
No obvious broken bones or anything, no.
And you said you were the tech. What does that mean?
I was the medic that was in charge. It's one or the other. You're either assisting the medic that's in charge or you're the medic in charge. Okay. So I was the medic in charge.
And was anyone else in the back of the ambulance with you treating Ms. Clancy?
Yes, my partner, Dan Smith.
Okay. Who was driving the ambulance, if you recall?
It was our deputy chief, Jim Shea. Okay.
And do you recall which hospital you went to?
South Shore Hospital.
While you're, let me ask you, how long approximately did it take you to get from 47 Summer Street in Duxbury to South Shore Hospital?
It's typically about, from Pembroke, it would be about 15 minutes, so it would be a little bit longer than that. I'm not sure the exact time, so probably maybe 18 minutes.
Okay. And while you're in that transport, in the back of the ambulance, after you've done this examination of Lindsay Clancy to see if there are any other injuries, what do you do next?
So we would start treatment. So we started putting two IVs as a precaution and any other treatment that was needed. So we noticed that her pupils were constricted and she was unresponsive. So we treated for a potential opioid overdose. We gave 2 milligrams of Narcan and she seemed to become a little bit more agitated, reaching, trying to grab, reaching out with her arms, but no verbal communication. She never, like, fully woke up.
And have you given Narcan to individuals in the past in your role as a paramedic?
Yes, I have.
What is a typical reaction when you give a patient Narcan?
It depends on the drug that they took or the amount of drugs that they took, but depending on what they take, they usually, their respirations will go up, their pupils will get a little bigger, or sometimes they fully wake up.
We know who they are, who's referred to.
The patient.
Yeah. All right.
And you were referring to patients that you've dealt with in the past in your role as a paramedic, is
that's
that correct?
That's correct, yes. Okay.
And so they would often wake up when given Narcan?
Yes.
Okay. And what type of drugs, based on your training experience, does Narcan work on?
We're trained to use it for opioid overdoses, so heroin, fentanyl, other drugs like that.
Okay. And does Narcan typically work on benzodiazepine?
We are not trained to use it for anything other than opioids.
Okay. And when you gave Lindsay Clancy the Narcan, she did not wake up, correct?
No.
Did you provide any other care to Lindsay Clancy on the way to the hospital?
Just continued to monitor her vitals and make sure there was no decline.
And once you arrived at the hospital, did you transfer her care to the hospital staff?
Yes, we did.
No other questions?
All right. So you're not trained in Narcan on benzodiazepines, is that correct?
Yeah, we don't give it for benzodiazepines.
Right. And in any event, when you gave Narcan to the body that was laying on the ground, she had already been wrapped up on her wrist, right?
That's correct.
Already been wrapped up, had the thing on the neck to prevent the head from moving, right?
That's correct.
And also had bandages perhaps on her neck area, I'm not sure.
There were no bandages that I could see because the collar blocks, yeah, some most of it I could see. There are some holes in the collar that we could see some superficial lacerations through,
right.
But there was no active bleeding. Her wrists were already bandaged, so we don't take the bandages off after they're on.
Okay.
And there was no blood screws.
I ask the questions, you can answer them, okay? Narcan administered to Lindsay Clancy on the ground, yes?
In the ambulance, but yes.
And there was no reaction. It didn't have any effect on her, right?
She appeared to become a little bit more, she started like reaching and grabbing a little bit more than she was before.
That's consistent as well with a person who's had a head injury, right?
Could be.
Yeah. So in any event, the Narcan that you're trained would be dealing with opioids, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, did you know, sir, at all that she suffered a burst fracture of a cervical spine? Did you know that, sir?
No.
T5 through T6, T4, 6, 7, 8, all exploded, fractured. Did you know that?
No.
Did you know that there was hemorrhaging into her body, that she fractured every rib in her body?
No.
It was pretty dark out there, wasn't it?
It was.
Did you obviously administer aid to her, or did you also have like a flashlight on your head? Were you holding a flashlight or what?
She was already packaged. She was already on the longboard and everything, so we picked her up, put her on the stretcher, and moved out of the backyard into the ambulance.
Right. So how long did you handle, if you will, her while she was laying there?
On scene? We were only on scene for, I think it was 7 minutes, I think, total on scene from the time that we... Yes.
And it was dark in the backyard, right?
Yes.
There was no exterior lighting, no nothing on the house that was lit up, like spotlights or anything, right?
That's correct.
No flashlights, right?
No.
And you scrutinized a hole in the thing that goes around the neck when someone has a head injury, especially a cervical injury, thoracic injuries. You scrutinized a hole that noted that there was superficial wound to her neck?
That's all we could see through the side of the collar.
Who's we?
Me and my partner.
Was your partner scrutinizing the hole as well?
The hole? I don't
know. It's like there's a hole in that, in the thing that goes around the neck.
Yeah, there's holes in the collar that you can see through.
Right, you were scrutinizing. You were looking through, right?
Yeah.
It's called the jury saw.
Yes.
Superficial head of the neck, right?
Yes.
Is your partner look through the hole as well? And you've talked about your testimony with the district attorneys in the past, haven't you?
Yes.
One of the things that they asked you is whether or not it appeared as though the injuries to her neck or wrist were superficial. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And other than looking through the little hole in the thing around her neck in the dark, you didn't see her neck after that was removed, did you?
No.
That's all we have.
Commonwealth, redirect.
Sir, after the 7 minutes that you were in the dark backyard, you were then in an ambulance for 18 minutes with the patient, correct?
That's correct.
And there's lighting in the ambulance, correct?
There is.
And during those 18 minutes in the well-lit ambulance, did you ever see blood seeping through the bandages on her wrists?
No.
During those 18 minutes in the well-lit ambulance, did you ever see blood pooling around her neck or flowing from the neck?
No.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further?
No.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Let me sit down. Thank you.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Ahora en McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken Meal Deal o un $6 McDouble Meal Deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.